everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name's Ben Jackson, and I will be your host. And as per usual, I am joined by Scott and Joris. Scott and Joris, how are you guys doing this evening?
Hey guys, well, if we haven't reached that time of the season where it's all about holding your nerve.
I always like to make the podcast, but there are some weeks that I like to make the podcast more, and there's weeks that I like it make it less. You can guess which one of it is this time.
I mean, we could just continue our chat that we had just before we started, which was trying to work out the best position for Charles de Ketelaar in the Milan system. So if you want to just do that instead of talking about Genk, I'm sure we could fit that in. Probably not as interesting for people that have tuned in to listen to the Belgian Pro League.
Or me.
So let's crack on. Just quickly run through the results. Charles de Ketelaar's former team, Club Bruges, they beat Salang 2-0, sending Salang down. Mechelen lost again, 4-1 this time to OH Leuven. Kortrijk and Eupen played out a 0-0 draw. Charleroi left it late to beat Zolder Waregem 3-2. Gent and Union played out a pretty entertaining 1-1 draw. Anderlecht drew 0-0 with Vestalo. Antwerp beat Cercle Bruges with a little bit of controversy to win 2-1. Standard beat Genk with a lot of controversy to win 2-0. And then St. Truiden just demolished East End for no apparent reason. That one finished 5-0. Let's start on Friday night then. Club Bruges against Salang. Salang knowing they absolutely had to win this game. Club just, needing to win it because they just want to get back into the top four and put some pressure on Gent ahead of their tie with Union. But it was a pretty lackluster first half from Club. Like, they had some chances. Deitch made a couple of saves, but on a better day against a better team, like, Salang really could have been ahead in this game. They had chance on the counter-attack, but kind of summing up their season, I guess, in this performance, they had some chances, but the final ball, the final pass, the final anything just wasn't really there for them, and they just couldn't find the back of the net and take advantage of the counter-attacks that Club were basically giving them kind of on a plate. They were obviously then punished. Fernuikle opened the scoring in the 56th minute. Club didn't get their second till the 90th. Really nice finish from Antonio Nusa, dinking it over Deitch. Salang go down. Club end up with 26 shots, 11 on target, 69% possession. I don't know if that really sums up. Like, I don't think Salang were actually as bad as those stats suggest. They were definitely in the game. And at times you thought, ugh, they could just nick something here, nick something there, maybe. But it was just going to be always kind of a stay of execution anyway. So they go down. We've kind of spoken a little about it last week about what we think is going to happen to them next season. But guys, I guess for Club, it was good. Put some pressure on Gent. Could have been a lot more if, like, they'd really wanted to. But for Sarang, a kind of spirited performance against a team that we're going to send, like, against the odds, they put some effort in. But at the end of the day, this has been coming since the first game of the season.
Yeah, I think Club had all the momentum in this game. It was all one-way traffic, really. It looked like Sarang were hoping to kind of hit them on the break. Despite their dominance, I don't think Club actually created that much, despite the number of shots they had, which will be the slightly concerning thing for them. It just felt a question of how many they were going to get, really. Sarang, obviously, gone now. That's been confirmed. But, you know, the numbers don't lie, as we know. I mean, they've only had 5 wins all season. Only one home win all season, which is a pretty terrifying kind of stat. We had a good laugh about that, you know, a number of weeks ago. But they've been averaging less than a goal a game, while at the same time averaging kind of conceding 2 a game, you know, and that those two numbers in themselves kind of tell us everything we need to know, really. I just wonder now, I suppose the question for me around Sarang is, can they keep some of the more interesting players that they do have? You know, the Daniel Aparis, the Marsoni Sambus, and the Marius Muandalmagis of this world.
I can't really add much more there. Sarang had far from their worst game, but yeah, too little, too late is a saying that's been invented for this kind of occasion, I suppose. What else? I can only say from Sarang's side, well, there was a debutant, so hey, so that's good for him personally, I suppose. There were, unfortunately for him though, 0 fans from away fans in the stadium. So that's he couldn't make his debut in front of the fans or his family or something even, I suppose. Of course, they maybe sat somewhere else in the stadium. I have no idea. But and from club side, 10th goal for Jutgla. That's good for him and for them. Then yeah, but it's most encouraging thing for them, I guess, is that Skov Olsen has made it back into the team, he has made his first minutes back. So after a while, so that that should help them in the short remainder of the season, and could prove importance in any way.
Yeah, no, definitely good for them to have him back in this kind of the last couple of games heading into the playoffs, and then in the playoffs they'll definitely need him if they're going to be successful. Yeah, not really much else to say about that one. This next one, there's a lot of goals, but in terms of the actual ramifications for the rest of the league, like, it didn't really mean anything. This was Leuven destroying Mechelen, just awful defending from Mechelen all over the pitch. Kasper de Noor opening the scoring in the 4th minute. Nathan Opoku got his first goal for Leuven, kind of taking advantage of the ball spilling out. It was one of those nice moments that, you know, where like you just want someone to run and hit it when the ball's bouncing around in the box, and he did that. Matty Mertens then, this one wound me up the most if I'm a Mechelen fan. The midfield just like watched him pick the ball up, drive into the space and smash it into the bottom corner. Like, it just didn't go anywhere near him. Opoku then turned provider, lobbing the ball over the top. Musa Altomare running on. He started at home. 60 minutes gone. 4-0. Jeffrey Hermans then got one back when he dinked the ball over the defence. It just kind of rolled into the goal because no one could be bothered to defend it or attack it or do anything like that. It just kind of went in. Guys, I don't know if you've got anything to say on this one, but it's one of those games where we've kind of said Mechelen, they've mentally checked out of the season already. They are just focused on the cup final now. This game is more evidence of that. For Leuven, they're not going to make it into playoff two. Just kind of a nice win. Good to see Opoku get a start and some goals and kind of have a good performance. He's already said he'd be happy to come back next season, which could be an option, but just kind of a 5-goal game that really didn't mean anything at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think you're right, Ben. I think decent stuff from Leuven, all told. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Nathaniel Opoku, because my notes have his name scribbled all over this game. Really decent game, goal and an assist, created a few other opportunities in the game, thought he looked really bright. And again, you've highlighted the big question I was going to ask in relation to him. Will he return next season, obviously on loan from Leicester under-21s. I don't think that would be bad for his development either. So I think he probably would be advised to kind of come back. Seems to be enjoying himself as well. You know, so hopefully we will see him back. Mechelen's point of view, it's looking a bit grim for them again. You know, it's back to kind of Groundhog Day. It feels a bit like deja vu talking about them. We know they've had a really poor and consistent season. They've now lost 4 of their last 5. They've only scored 3 in that time while conceding 14. So going into the last 2 games of the regular season at home to Ghent and away to Anderlecht, and obviously they've got the cup final coming up, you do worry for them, especially with all of their focus looking like it's now in the cup final, because mentality-wise, regardless of whether your season's really over or not, you just kind of feel that they're not really approaching things the way you would like them to at the moment. And I kind of feel there's a lot of work to be done there over the summer, actually.
Yes, there definitely is. And, well, there won't be that much of a capital injection. There will be some, but it's more for covering debt, so that I don't think much of it will go into player capital for next season, so that that could prove very damaging for them still. Yeah, Scott mentioned the last 5 games. I had narrowed it down to the last 3. 9 goals conceded, 2 scored. Yet another big loss for Mechelen. They are also the worst away team in the league. That does say something as well. But regardless of that, of course, this game, it's indeed like a dead rubber, like nothing really happening. Opoku getting his first goal indeed, and also that the attempt hitting the post, which was a bit frivolous. It definitely deserved a goal, but I think since it's gone wide, actually, that should be infuriating for both teams. That one, for Michele, that he was so free and like he could do whatever he wanted there. And, well, of course, since the ball didn't go in, I guess his teammates also should be, at that point of the game, I think it was only 1-0. Like, why did you try that? Just put it in the back of the net, or just pass the ball. Even there were so many few players that whole phase was another defensive disaster for Michele. And all in all, well, really a dead rubber between two teams that are among the very few teams that had nothing to really fight for anymore. Before this game, I think Leuven, they're now 5 points behind the top eight, and I don't know how it works with games between teams inside those top eight, but I doubt they have even the slightest chance, mathematical chance even, to still get there. So, but nonetheless, good win for them, and well, ending the season on a good note for them. For Michele, all about the cup final, but like Steven De Voer also mentioned after the game, like if players really think that that's gonna, that you can now completely lose focus and then it miraculously comes back in that one game, it is not very likely to happen. That change indeed should still come inside these last few games, I think, like this mentality change and getting some things right that you can build on for this specific game as well.
If they're going to defend like that in the cup final, it's going to be pretty poor in terms of a spectacle. I don't know if you guys noticed, but I feel like as the goals went in, Gaetan Cooke lost more and more hair, and by the end, like he started developing like a bald patch at the top.
Well, we all get older, no?
Some of us can do it within the space of 90 minutes, or an hour apparently for him. He was just, I felt bad for him because for most of those, it's just like he was just livid with everyone in front of him, which you could definitely understand the way that went. Let's go to Kortrijk, where the point against Erpen, confirmed they will still be in the league next season. Bernstorck coming in, completely changed things there. I think he deserves a lot of credit for what he's done to make them more difficult to beat. Just a completely better team after the ridiculousness of the Kustovic kind of, we're going to call it the Kustovic era. We could probably do that. It felt like forever as a Kortrijk fan, but it was awful. Erpen did think they'd taken a lead through Reagan Charles Cook, but that one was ruled out by VAR. Kortrijk did have plenty of chances. Soleimani had a couple of shots fizzing wide, 60% possession to Erpen's 38. But Erpen, they did have the chances as well, 13 shots, 3 on target. It was kind of hard, like we were discussing it as well. Like, is this a good point for them or not? And it all depended on the games that followed. But in the end, it's actually proved to be a very good point, because losing it would have kept the door very much open for the sides below them. But this could be the point. It saved Kortrijk. This could be the point that saves Erpen, depending on how they finish off these next two games.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because obviously there's a massive game coming up this weekend with Erpen at home to Zulte Waregem. And rather perversely, Erpen don't really need to win that. If they do, obviously, that's it. It's absolutely finished. But they don't need to win it in the sense that, you know, Zulte would be relying then on winning their last two and Erpen losing their last two. And Zulte haven't won back-to-back games since October. It's just one of those things where you think, It's you just don't see it happening in a million years. So a lot of the spice that would have been in that being sort of sucked out of it. And I think Zulte psychologically, after what happened to them this weekend, which we'll talk about shortly, I think are going to come into this game on pretty low spirits for a number of reasons. From Kortrijk's point of view, and particularly Bernstorck, it's subjective achieved, and it's going to be really interesting to see whether he is there next season, because when he came in, everybody was very open and said, look, this is just to the end of the season, the objective is to stay in the league, and after that we'll have a conversation. Well, that conversation can now take place. They could probably make worse appointments.
Yeah, but we will have to see how that story develops. But like you guys said, Kortrijk is safe now. Erpen are most likely safe, because this 1 point indeed means that both Zulte Waregem and Oostende would have to win both of their next two encounters. Even getting 4 out of 6 won't be enough for either of them. at this point in time, I believe. Maybe for Oostende, there might be a little caveat there, because I think they can get level on victories, but I do think their goal difference is massively in favor of Eupen at the moment. Yes, it is. So like, at least, it practically speaking, both Oostende and Zulte Waregem would need to back-to-back wins to get past Eupen at this point in time. And it isn't looking very likely, so this point proves valuable. This was a game with two phases. Eupen were largely the better side in the first half, or the better side. They were leaning back, but they were hitting Kortrijk on the counter. They didn't manage to do that too well, though. They got a few chances. They also got that one goal, which was disallowed, but they wasted a lot of opportunities as well at the final pass. As happens so often with bottom teams, I suppose. It was their first clean sheet in 2023 for Eupen as well, though. So that's encouraging for them, especially when you look at the previous fixture between them and Zulte Waregem, which was that dramatic 5-5. So yeah, it's good to get a clean sheet before that one, and let's see if they can hold out and already secure safety in this second to last game next weekend against Zulte Waregem, or if we will actually have to go for us it might not even be the worst, but like that it actually goes to the wire. It's only between these three teams at the moment anymore for one safe spot. And Eupen largely have the better cards in their hand. More worrying for Eupen, though, is like they only got one win in their last 14 games, though. So like, they might actually have to rely on that draw. That's not great. Also, that's also no win. So one in last 14 and none in the last 7. So yeah, it is time for them to get back to winning ways, clearly. Yeah, not much to say for Kortrijk. They got the point they needed. And especially given the rest of the results, they are now safe. So indeed, like Scott said, objective achieved.
Yeah, no, I definitely... I'm kind of the agreement that I just want to see that kind of end of season final day where you're kind of bouncing around the grounds, like who's going down, who's doing this, who's doing that. Because I love that. Everyone loves that. Unless you're involved in it, obviously, and have been involved in that one or two times as a Reading fan. But I just don't think it's going to happen. And kind of the main reason for that is the game we're going to go into now, which is Charleroi against Zulte Waregem. Zulte Waregem, to open this game, had so many chances. Thought they'd taken the lead. That was all that by VAR. Gano missed a couple of sitters, really. He should have had about a hat-trick. They did eventually take the lead. Just awful defending from Charleroi. Somehow, Indoor just is able to pick the ball up on the halfway line, run all the way through and smash it in to make it 1-0 to Zulte Waregem. But they really should have kind of been adding to that lead throughout the game. They certainly had the chances. And I don't know, the atmosphere of this game was ridiculous. It felt like a cup final watching it. It was weird because normally you watch Charleroi at home and it's a bit like there's behind the goal to the left-hand side of where the ultras are. That's always a good atmosphere. But then like opposite of the camera, it's kind of sparsely populated. But there are loads of people there this weekend. Zulte Waregem travelled quite well as well. They had a fair amount in their end. So really, really good atmosphere. Felt like a cup final, end of season game. Charleroi did get back into it after the hour mark. Bayo finishing off after the ball kind of deflected around Boston and made a really pretty decent save. They then turned around completely. Marco Lamarici with a fantastic through ball finds Isaac Mbenza to make it 2-1. 7 minutes later, those Zulte Waregem are back in it. Ali Federa kind of catches Coffee out at his near post, smashing that one in. But then, of all the players to score a 96th minute winner in the manner that he did, no one would have put any money on Damian Mark. Damian Mark wouldn't have put any money on Damian Mark. And I think if Damian Mark saw Damian Mark shaping up to shoot from where he did, he'd have told him to not do it. But he did it. And it just flew into the top bin. A ridiculous goal from of all the players to score it. It just kind of lifted the roof off the stadium, didn't it? They were gone. The players are gone. Mazu was gone. Coffee sprinted down the pitch as well. Like Mazu time strikes again. Zulte Waregem players are literally, I think it's best summed up by Louis Boston. He just lies there for the entire celebration. Like, they're celebrating, he's just lying there, just can't believe what's happened. Because at the end of the day, I think I said it as soon as it went in, I was like, you can stick the first fork in them, because that felt like it, didn't it? That felt like that was the moment where it's like, your luck is, you've got no luck. Like, your luck has completely run out. When someone, that player, is doing that to you, a former player as well, it just feels like that is, there's no way back. Like, they played well, they tried their best, they had the chances, didn't take advantage of it, got punished. Mazu time is kind of like the end time now for Zoltán, it felt like.
Yeah, the scenes when that 96 minute went in were incredible, actually. I think it's probably the most dramatic moment of the weekend. We shared that on our social media, because there were some great scenes and some very telling scenes. Louis Boston wasn't the only Zalta player who's kind of down and out on the ground, actually. It looked like, you know, that was the metaphorical dagger to Zalta's heart. There's no doubt about it. And it was the moment they knew. Interesting as well that Aliou Fatira was saying after the game that it was extremely quiet in their dressing room, understandably. I think they know that's it now. And that was the moment. It was interesting to see Charleroi release some of Félix Mazu's halftime team chat on their social media this week as well. He absolutely battered the Zebras at halftime. As we know, they were 1-0 down at the time, and he came out and he said, look, you basically played about 10 minutes of football in the first half there. This is not acceptable. Get out there, press them and get into them. That was the gist of the message. Didn't mess about. And of course, they were much, much better in the second half. Charleroi really dominated Zalta and managed to get themselves over the line courtesy of that really dramatic late winner. But that's a good example of a team talk that got exactly the response that it wanted. And as Ben was saying, Mazu time's back. You know, I think he knows that club very well, having had a successful spell there before, and just kind of fits them like a glove in a number of ways. A lot of people still at the club he knows off the pitch as well, which I think helps. And he has had, over the last six to eight weeks, he's really started to affect kind of positive change. They've been on a really good run. We've been talking about it for 3 or 4 weeks. They're certainly one of the most informed sides in the league as well. And I've been building up some real momentum there. So high drama right at the very end there.
The way to get a sucker punch from your former player, indeed, like Ben also already mentioned. Charleroi, 5 wins in the last 6, 3 wins in a row. I still don't know how, 2 of them in a row also just in the final minutes, and the third one was against Antwerp, where they easily could have lost big time even as well. But so it's also, there's definitely a bit of luck involved as well, together with obviously the mentality that is in that team now. The incredible run from them. I think they're also, if you look at the rankings since the World Cup break, I think they're one of the, I think they're even making Champions playoffs, if you would only look at it from then, or it would be close to it anyway. Way better than they are positioned now, of course, anyways. The bad news for them, of course, came earlier today, on Tuesday, that we're recording, that the game against Mechelen isn't going to be replayed, but that the points are granted to Mechelen, which is probably the reasonable decision. But nonetheless, they are standing in good stead to reach the Europe playoffs now. They have it all in their own hands, given other results, which we will talk about later on as well. Zoltán, 11 times they have taken the lead this season, which on itself I think is not that many anyways. But they only won 5 of these games as well that they have taken the lead. So, obviously that is not enough. And they will have to do it twice in a row now, like Scott also already mentioned before. It's not very likely that will happen, regardless of the opponents that they have. And they have an incredibly bad statistic in Mambourg, in Charleroi, as well. They haven't won in Charleroi since 2013, which were better times for Zoltán when they ended 2nd. Since then, they've only gathered 1 point. And that has proven again this weekend. They could have doubled that total, but yeah, that's it wasn't to be, and that's seems to be the story of their season.
Yeah, and the point would have been that it wouldn't have been the best thing, obviously, that they needed the win, but it would have kept them kind of thinking that if we beat Erpen, we're then level on points at least. We just have to do better than them on the final game of the season and we can stay up, wouldn't it? But now it's like we've got to beat them and they've got to win again, and we're not very good at doing that. So I don't think we're going to do it. So, it was a disappointing way for them to kind of crumble like that. Whereas, I don't know, I think this kind of iteration of Charleroi is back to that kind of, you've got your physical strikers that are just, like, Zolta's defence did get bullied during this game. Mm. Like, they were getting, like, you know you're going to be in for a scrap when you've got Bio, Badji, even Mbenza can, like, tussle with everyone. Then in midfield, you've obviously got Lamalita, Zorgan. Like, these are physical guys. They've got a really physical team. So even when, if they do make it into playoff two, I think they're going to cause a couple of problems for people. I don't think they'll, like, come top of playoff two or anything like that, but they're going to be a difficult team to play against, that is for sure. But they're still going to make it, and that's the big question. One side that's going to be desperate to avoid getting into playoff two, because they want to get into playoff one, is Ghent, and they hosted Union Saint-Gilloise on Saturday evening. Obviously, club's win over Selang meant that they'd leapfrogged the Buffaloes into that fourth place. So again, coming into this one knowing that they needed to get at least a point or a win to jump back in, started pretty badly for them. Victor Boniface had the ball on the left-hand side for what felt like 5 minutes, trying to work out. He was like, I'm trying to cut back and cross. I'm going to drive to the byline and cross. I'm going to cut back and cross. I'm going to drive to the byline and cross. Like, he was deciding that a couple of times. Eventually, he's like, I'm just going to go to the byline, and I'm bigger and quicker and stronger than everyone else, so I'll be able to do that. He did. He was able to do it because he was up against Ford, Alessio Castro Montes, who was still playing centre-back. Squares the ball. John Taylor Czar is in there, takes a nice touch. Completely wrong foot. Okumu, who should really have done better and just stayed on his feet, smashes it in. Union 1-0 up within the space of a minute. And then it was just a pretty kind of frantic game after that. Both sides pushing. Maurice made a couple of really good saves. Looked like he'd made a really, really important save, albeit fortuitously in the second half, where ball takes a deflection of Leenan. He saves it. The ball's going in. He scrambles back, and somehow his momentum doesn't take him over the line. It was incredible. Unfortunately for him, Leenan, the ball hit Leenan on the hand, which meant that Ghent had a penalty. Hugo Kuipers steps up. He makes it one apiece. That's how it finishes. Ghent back into playoff two. And don't want to kind of jinx them or anything, guys, but I feel like when you look at kind of the last two games for them at Mechelen and East End, that this was the big one where club really could have taken advantage and taken back ownership of that top four spot.
Well, it's interesting because Big Hein, I think, was delighted with this point in the end. And you can see why, because the point may well turn out to be very significant yet. In the lead up to this game, Hein, in his pre-match press conference during the week, was talking about how he thinks Union are probably the most complete side in the league. Probably the best side, and was generally talking them up a lot, which sometimes is a little bit of psychological gamesmanship, but I felt it was genuine in this case, and also alluding to the fact that obviously again haven't been able to get the better of Union Saint-Gilloise at all since they've returned to the top flight. In fact, you have to go back to 1986, I think, was the last time Ghent beat Union, which was 6-1 in the cup. Prior to that, you have to go back even further. I think it's 1970 in the league before they last had a win against them, albeit Union have been away for 48 years, which is a long time, so that kind of skews those stats slightly. But I think there was a little bit of pressure deliberately put on Ghent by Big Hein and his side by saying, look, this is a really good side. We haven't been able to really touch them yet. Let's go out there and see if we can do that. And I thought, you know, this was a quite an enjoyable game, as Ben was saying, really good competitive game. Ghent gave it a really good go, which they were going to have to do, especially after going back behind so early in such dramatic fashion. But, you know, carried most of the momentum after that. I thought Akumu had a really decent game and didn't get much attention afterwards, but I thought he had a strong game. And it's been another really good weekend for Union, obviously, with Genk's result. Even though Union drop points themselves, they'll be more than happy this weekend because the gap's been reduced.
But the gap to Antwerp also has been reduced. You have to look in your rearview mirror as well. So I don't think they should be that happy. And given the reaction of Gerards after the game, Union were one of the first teams this weekend that were really furious about the refereeing. And unfortunately, we will have to talk about that later as well. But and also, I wouldn't read too much into Hans' words about the best team and so on. I've heard him saying that about too many teams already right now, even inside one season, I think. So that's just covering his own ass mostly, I think.
Psychological gamesmanship.
Regardless of that, though, of course, Union are in good stead still, and they did get that quick lead, brilliant goal as well, of course. Lazare got that goal, but also caught an injury that might prove one of those things by the end of the season. Also, we'll talk about a bit more of that later on as well, but that could prove important. Also, in this case, I don't know if he will be fit for the game against Leverkusen in their European run, which is already in a few days' time. It's not very likely that he will be recovered, I think, although I didn't get any medical bulletin update. So I cannot really say much about it, but that would be a bit of a blow for them, for specifically the European game. And yeah, indeed, Gent getting that point. It might depend a bit on if Oostende somehow managed to win next weekend as well, and then they might have something to play for in Gent still. Will be definitely a tough ask for them anyway, but if they're completely played out, it does look like a favorable schedule to Gent either way. But if they're completely played out, even more so. It was their first goal against Union, though, so to add against the stats since they're back, so in these two seasons that they are back, and that includes a cup tie this season as well. First goal for Gent on a penalty, which. Yeah, it's a handball. I don't think there's any point in discussing any high handball penalties anymore because there's just no point. Nobody sees the point anymore.
Yeah, just cut your hands off. That's the safest way to avoid getting a penalty given against you at the moment. Let's move down into playoff two for the Sunday lunchtime game, which saw Anderlecht against Vesterlo. Obviously, Charleroi's late winner put a lot of pressure on Anderlecht to get some points against Vesterlo to move back into playoff one. They weren't able to do that. Vesterlo keeping a rare clean sheet. Anderlecht keeping a clean sheet as well, thanks to Bart Verbruggen, 6 saves for him in the game. I mean, be shocked to still see him there at the club in the summer. I think a big offer is definitely going to come in for him. The kind of ramifications for this one are that, Charleroi now a point ahead of Anderlecht in that playoff two spot. Vesterlo probably going to keep their playoff two spot, just need to get at least another point and they will probably be okay. If another win, though, would definitely give them that kind of security, and they'll have to hope to do that against Club Bruges next weekend. But for Anderlecht, it's frustration, isn't it, guys? Because Charleroi now have won 3 on the bounce and are looking good. And they've got the European game coming up this week, do Anderlecht, but they really need to make a playoff two spot. That's kind of like imperative for their season.
Yeah, well, it's beginning to look a little bit like they're going to have to go even further in Europe now. to really achieve some of those kind of longer term objectives. And I think that's even more telling, because that'll have an impact on their budget for next season as well, even if Verbruggen does leave for a massive fee in the summer, which there is a possibility of, as Ben was saying, attracting a lot of attention and interest at the moment. Absolutely excellent this weekend, man of the match as well, probably rightly so. Joining the Dutch national team recently as well, so everything's moving in a rapidly upward trajectory for him. I think Anderlecht will try very hard to hold on to him, as they should. They absolutely should do that, and he won't leave for anything less than a big fee, because that would allow them the maneuverability, obviously, to reshape the squad should that happen to them. I kind of feel that Anderlecht, the momentum's kind of come off a little bit since Verscharen's come out of the team. Slimani, despite Brian Reimer saying he was fully fit, I wasn't entirely buying that. Obviously, he didn't start the game, and he was commenting on the fact that they pushed him really to the limit, which tells me that he wasn't kind of fully fit. And I think we're starting to see an Anderlecht side perform not quite at the levels that they had been when Verscharen was still in before his injury, and before Slimani had his injury as well. They'd become very important as they built a little bit of momentum up. Westerlo, on the other hand, I think probably will feel really unlucky not to have nicked this. I think in the last 20 minutes, they really gave it a bit of a good go. Brian Reimer also commented that he felt they'd come for a point. You know, they sat quite deep for a lot of the game, which I completely understand, actually, because Anderlecht obviously had been playing kind of quite high-intensity pressing football for a while and getting some reasonable results from that over the last couple of months. And they were always going to have more of the ball at home here, I think. So I think Jonas de Rock kind of got his tactics right. And then they threw a bit more caution to the wind in the last quarter of an hour. And Anderlecht had been a little bit vulnerable in the last 15, 20 minutes of games over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And that's something that we saw a lot of during their time in Vincent Kompany, where games would kind of peter away from them a little bit. They've managed to kind of stop that happening. They've stemmed the flow, but the early indications of them just kind of, you know, switching off at kind of a key moment in games. And that European spot is now out of their hands.
Yep, indeed. That's the worrying thing for them after this game. One of the worrying things, result-wise, definitely. The encouraging thing is that it's indeed another clean sheet, which makes it 5 out of 5 the last 5 games as well. 4 of them in the league, 1 against Villarreal. Another game where Verbrugge had a really good game. I don't think there's even the slightest bit of chance that he will be there next season, especially with the European championships under 21 going on, and they're preparing him for that. That's why he came into the team basically already with the intent but with the incentive, I guess, to sell. Also, of course, given their financial reality still, it's getting slightly better, but they still need one or two big sales this summer, I suppose. And but he's been so very, very impressive. Like, it's incredible how good he is, like, and how consistently good he is as well. He got one little moment in the first half where he probably got a little bit lucky that things didn't go end well, that he went out a bit too early out of his goal. Well, it looked like too early. He got lucky that the Westerlo player, I believe it was Fixell, did not make most of that situation, so that they either didn't concede, or that he would have been sent off, which would have been a possibility, and that would of course be harmful for all that. But apart from that, in the last 20 minutes, Anderlecht didn't create that much, but they were in control until the last 15 minutes, much like in Eupen, I suppose, and then we still had chance after chance. They hit the bar twice. They had two amazing saves from Verbrugge from close by as well. A miracle that Westerlo didn't score, at least. Whether they would have won the game or deserved to win the game, that's maybe something else, but they did it, that they didn't score is anyway a rarity, I suppose. Also in general in the season, that doesn't happen so often. And as Ben also mentioned, on the other end, though, they also get a clean sheet, which is rarer for them. It's not a 5 out of 5 for them here. I believe it's the first one inside the last 5 games that they get, if I'm not mistaken. Westerlo, I guess they still will need that win. So it might depend on that final game against Sarajevo, maybe, for the playoff spot itself. And if they really want to do something in that playoff, it's probably better that they actually win against Club Brugge as well to keep the distance close against, so actually have a shot at the finishing in fifth spot as well. And to make half of the league happy, I guess, as well at this point, just because of like keeping everyone close to that spot. But just important point for them, though, of course, so that they do have everything in their own hands. And I feel like they probably will get there. Still not completely over the line yet.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. If they beat Club Brugge and that closes the gap, I think everyone apart from Club Brugge fans would obviously be happy. Just because, playoff two then becomes quite an exciting playoff is the closer they all get. And it looks like they could be quite close, depending on how results go. One side that it looks like they're probably not going to make it now after the weekend's results, that's Cercle Bruges. They travelled to Antwerp. Dino Hotić got a rare start in this one. We haven't seen a Dino Hotić start for a while. Obviously, with his contract situation and stuff, the club have been looking at using other players. But Hotić gets a start and he gets a goal. Ueda holding it up. He finds Jan Borho, who then, he plays a really nice pass to Dino Hotić, who's running through, and he finishes it off to make it 1-0. Van Bommel kind of responds at halftime. He hauls off, as we could say, Michel Ange-Balakwisha, brings on Jelano Kirk. Kirk thinks he's equalised with a fantastic strike, but that one was ruled out for VAR infringement. They do then get the equalising goal in the 72nd minute. Corner comes in. Poor Boris Popovic just hits him and goes in. As it's going in, he tries to clear it and ends up just lumping it into the roof of the net. I haven't quite seen on the replay whether the ball was over the line before he lumped it into his own net, but we'll give him a benefit.
Unfortunately, we can't give him that. It was, he should have done better. It was a ridiculous goal in the end, I guess.
I was hoping beyond hope for his sake that the ball was already over the line. It was irrelevant, but okay, he tries to clear it and he just boots it up into his own net. Majeki's just like, gave him a death stare. Mickey was then probably giving the referee a death stare when Antwerp ordered a penalty for Thibaut Sommer's handball in the box or close to the edge of the box. I can see why they're annoyed about it. But as we just said, I guess that anything with the hand at the moment has just been given a penalty. But it is a bit all over the place. Janssen's back, but he doesn't step up to take it. Instead, it's Mr. Toby Alderweireld again, because Janssen was off the pitch. I wonder now whether he's going to get given the penalties full time, because he slots it in despite Majeki. I think it's Majeki shouting at him. I don't know if it's the fans or someone else, but from the replay and the highlights I saw, it sounded like the keeper was trying to put him off. And to be fair, Majeki's been pretty good at penalties, so I wouldn't doubt any of his techniques in that. But Alderweireld sticks it in. 2-1, it finishes to Antwerp. As we said, they close the gap on Union to just 3 points now. For Cercle, it means they are 3 points off of Charleroi, but they've won 3 less games than Charleroi. So they have to go above them or Anderlecht or whoever is in that spot to do so. It's looking a tough ask. I think they can win out. They're playing St. Truden's Ultevargem, so they have a chance to win out. But my kind of feeling at the moment, guys, is that even if they do win out, I don't think it's going to get them there. I think one of those other teams between Anderlecht and Charleroi will probably do enough in the remaining 2 games to give themselves that kind of playoff 2 spot.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, this game is really all about that controversial penalty call. It is a handball, you're right. I'm still not convinced it was in the area or even on the line, which obviously is the larger issue with it. And that's where the frustration kind of comes from. Yeah, as we were saying earlier, week in, week out, there's 100 handball decisions, which, you know, never used to be given. That's what it feels like, almost every game has won now every week. Interestingly, this is the first time that Cercle have lost consecutive away matches under Miron Muzlic, which tells you how well they've been doing and also how consistently they've been performing on the whole. And that probably adds to the frustration that they lost this game due to such a debatable decision.
Yeah, I can even say more. Before the game, since Muzlic has taken over, they had more gathered more points than Antwerp in the same spell. Mm. Now that's not the case anymore. I think it was more or less in the same vein anyway. But yeah, that shows how good they have been since his appointment, for sure, as well. As well as Antwerp, yeah, having that, of course, the minor tipping form earlier in the season as well, helping with that statistic specifically. But Antwerp, winners of the weekend because of that decision. Yeah, certainly on yet another team that's furious about the refereeing decisions, maybe not even taking all into account just this game, but they've conceded 14 penalties this season, which is a lot, for sure. Yeah. Alderweireld on a goal scoring streak is also worth to mention, of course. He already touched on it, Ben, as well. Also, additionally, on Hotic, it was indeed the first start in 3 months for him. Then to get that goal, it must have felt good. Yeah, not that. Poor Popovic, maybe, but also like that was quite a ridiculous own goal, especially since there was no Antwerp player around him, so there was no pressure on him to. He could have just let the ball go, and it would have been out of danger. And yeah, his first bad touch gets it all well, already gives it the wrong direction for him, and then his final kick. Well, at least it was not completely over the line. It might have been on the line, but it didn't cross the line for sure. So yeah, and then he only made it worse. It's a bit of a ridiculous look. And of course, that equalizer then came just in time for Antwerp to still nick the game. Cercle had a good spell of chances right after the second half started as well. That's where they probably should have, maybe killed the game or at least put them in a safer distance. But all in all, probably a deserved win for Antwerp nonetheless. But yeah, Cercle didn't had their moments, but didn't take their chances. And then, you know, yeah, in a very unlucky way, I guess twice gave it away with their goals conceded as well. And it does, yeah, well, that could be the one lifeline, though, maybe for Zulte-Waregem, though, if Cercle Brugge would already be out of the race for Euro playoffs before their game in the final in match day. If Zulte-Waregem managed to win against Eupen, who knows? That would be a different dynamic for that game at least. And yeah, Zulte-Waregem would definitely be up for it then for still. But yeah, that's really grasping at straws, of course.
Yeah, we'll also talk about another team that were completely out of it against a relegation team that were definitely still in it. And that game definitely didn't go the way you'd probably expect it to. Unfortunately, we're going to move Joris to Liège now for standard Liège against Genk. I'll allow you to describe to everyone what happened in terms of controversy, but I'll just quickly run through the goals that did take place, both from Philip Zinkernagel. He scored a tap-in to make it 1-0 in the 33rd minute. He then converted a penalty after a Preciado foul in the 39th minute. Really coolly slotted penalty, I guess we could say. Van der Voort guesses the right way and it's close. And it's one of those, if the keeper saves it, you're like, well, he took it too nonchalantly anyway. Just a bit of a nightmare for Genk in terms of injuries as well. Samata illness, he wasn't playing. Arakadali's injured as well, obviously, as we know. That meant Urasaw started up front. He was then injured, had to come off at half-time. Carlos Cuesta had to come off injured as well. I mean, it was just kind of a nightmare day for Genk and Vanken, wasn't it, Joris?
Yes, that's the least you can say, indeed. Even regardless of just the specific loss, that we'll have to live with anyway. But yeah, I think that of all those things happening, I think the Cuesta injury is the main one for me. I've heard it isn't looking great. I still haven't done. We still don't have an official statement or injury update. But it isn't looking great. So very much possible that that was his last game of the season, even if my information is correct. While Sadiq is a good replacement, Cuesta has been still the standout defender in that defense, I think, and Sadiq, regardless of his own qualities, is just slightly let's say two levels less, to put it that way. But not that he had anything to blame in this game himself, Sadiq. It's more that whole change that was a bit of a controversy. As well, of course, Sadiq was already ready. The ball went out really close to Sadiq as well. Genk had been playing with 10 men for too long anyway, already before that. And then the first goal falls. Of course, it doesn't mean that you need to concede a goal with 10, but when it's really your central defender that would be most likely in that area where that needs to be defended for that goal, it is really painful, especially since the referee even admitted to Franken in the already at halftime, sorry, you're right, I should have let the change be made. Yeah, and then they threw away a game in 2 minutes. That's unfortunately the thing that threw away the game in 2 minutes. Specifically talking about this game. Genk was still shaking off and very furious about that first goal. Elkanus a bit too easy at the ball when after the kickoff was given after that first goal, loses the ball, which initiates the attack to get to that penalty. Also, with that first goal, I do not know if it actually has been checked for offside in the end because of all the other controversy, but it really was really narrow, probably as narrow as El Hadj, Ait El Hadj in the second half, when he was fouled afterwards by Bodar, which was offside, just narrowly. It was a tough call anyway for that first goal, but we never saw any line, even though that's transparency-wise, at least, that doesn't look really, really great. It might have been just onside, might not have been. Anyway, it was one of those games that nothing was going into Genk's favor. Also inside the play as well. Even after the 2-0, especially in the second half, Genk actually played quite okay, quite all right. They had started all right until Sor initially got that injury, even when he was still on the pitch for until halftime. After he got that injury, he definitely disappeared a bit out of the game as well, and the standard came into the game. In the second half, Genk, it's not that they created chance after chance, but they did create enough chances to at least put one and probably more away. But then the final minute probably actually summed it up. Well, not the final minute, but somewhere in stoppage time already. Free kick from Trezor. Really good hit. I think it's actually a good Bodar save. I'm not completely sure he touches the ball, but I do think so. Before it touches the bar, it bounces back to Hane, who hits it well with his head. But then Fossey makes the most ridiculous of clearances off the line as well. So the ball it wasn't going to be in the back of the net to this day. That in itself, this game, we can classify it. It's of course one. It has happened too often in the last streaks in the last run in here that Genk have not been able to recover or take the game and win. The more worrying things are, I guess, the injuries indeed. And Hen also picked up a yellow card. Which I'm also not so certain that actually was a yellow card as well, to top it all up as well. But that means he's suspended for the Anderlecht game in the weekend as well. And not to forget, Munoz was also already out injured. He's also still unsure for the game against Anderlecht. It's all getting a bit too much, and I do actually feel like I'm off. It's also going to be easier easing my mind. I try not to be too pessimistic generally, but in my mind, if it's going to be a two-horse race for the title, it's one without Genk even. But that's way too early to tell. But that's the state of mind I am in at the moment, which can change really quickly again, hopefully for me as well.
It's really interesting to hear Joris's analysis there, because my notes actually on Genk in this game are more on The fact that Genk have lost all sense of momentum, really. It seems to have been draining away kind of slowly in a way, but I think it's kind of ground to a halt now. I mean, when you look at some of the numbers as well recently, kind of 9 points out of a possible 24, I think, recently, only 2 wins and 8. They are conceding too many goals at the moment. And as Joris was saying, they've not been responding particularly well to going behind in games. They have struggled when that's happened. And I think this weekend, they just did not look up for the fight at all. I think last week they were good. We saw more of what they can do. I just feel that, you know, this weekend they were lacking any bite at all when required to respond. And I think with the momentum kind of pausing for them now, I think that would be the big concern for Rankin. The positive in all of this, if there is one actually from a Genk perspective, is the message to that squad, I'm sure, will be, look, you go into the playoffs now, there are 6 games there, albeit there's a couple of games still to go before that. You have 6 games to go on a run and still win this title, so it's absolutely still there for them. But it would be a big concern because when you look at Union's form and Antwerp's form, Genk have in comparison kind of gone off a cliff. But having said that, you know, they're still very much in this. It's just about how they respond to the injuries and the suspensions, and whether those two things, as Joris was saying, become bigger factors in terms of catching up on them. But yeah, I mean, really, really disappointing performance for them this weekend. But it was always going to be a very difficult game, this, because, you know, Standard have performed very well, as we know, against, you know, top sides this season, and they did it again this weekend.
Yeah, it's those injuries as well, like, it is that kind of, the striker injuries, it's like, without Paul Romacci, everyone's like, are they going to be able to do it without Paul Romacci? But it's like they had a striker depth in the sense they had Arakadai, they had Samatta at least. Saw was, I think Rankin was like, I'm on my 6th striker here. Like, this is how ridiculous it's gotten to. So that's my biggest concern for Genk, are the injuries. And it's just seeing what does happen when they come through. But I think we know now we're going to have a title race in these playoffs. This playoff one, it's going to be a title race and it's going to be exciting. I think there's going to be lots of kind of twists and turns still to take place when those 4 sides kind of play each other. If it's going to be a 3-horse race, obviously, and then Ghent or Club Brugge kind of being the spoiler of the party, that can kind of have a big impact on it. So, yeah, I'm buzzing for playoff one at the moment. I think it's going to be really good entertainment. Let's go to the game that kicked off 45 minutes after this one, which, yeah, kind of alluded to it earlier in the sense that Centurion have absolutely nothing to play for, Usen have everything to play for, but it was the Canaries that actually turned up on the day. Gianni Bruno with a free kick in the 11th minute finds Jorge Teixeira. He powers his header home, probably his last ever goal for Centurion. So that's his 6th goal for Centurion, definitely his last, as he'll be leaving at the end of the season. Usen then give away a penalty and Gianni Bruno steps up to finish that one off. Really, really just decisive penalty from Bruno. And then East End, yeah, just fall apart. A couple of half-time subs, obviously, Salhammer rolling the dice, brings off a couple of players to go for it. But their defence is just horrendous. Rocco Reach, just... this is one of the easiest goals I think any midfielder is ever going to score. He plays a free ball to Teichi Hala. Hala has time to hold it up. Reach just ghosts. Well, not even ghosts. Like, it's so obvious. He moves into the box. None of the East End midfielders track him. None of the defenders track him. He just puts it in to make it 3-0. On the counter-attack, Hashioka with an assist for Bruno to get his 2nd of the game. 2 goals and assist for him. Olivier Dumont comes in the 81st minute. Olivier Dumont scores in the 88th minute. Shinji Okazaka, unselfish play. He finds Dumont on the edge of the box. Dumont puts it into the back of the net. 5-0 it finishes, which, I mean, going into this game, the results has actually gone East End's way in a little bit, if you think about it. Like, Open obviously drawing meant that they were only 4 points ahead, 1 point if they'd got the win. Zultavara game losing, so they could have leapfrogged kind of 3 points above of them, knowing that Zulta had to go to Open and win, which means that Open might have lost that game, which means if East End had won, they'd jump above them as well. So everything was kind of working towards them being as things being in their favour, because they were also playing against a Centurion side who had absolutely nothing to play for. But in the same way that the Damian Mark goal kind of summed up Zoltán season and the end of it, in my opinion, this result says to me that there is no chance that side is staying in the league. There's no chance they're going to win two in a row, because that was just pathetic at the end of the day. Like, to lose 5-0 in that manner against a side with nothing to play for, like, the fans would just be, I'd just be livid as a fan after seeing that. Because then they're going to go play against Leuven, who we just saw had nothing to play for but put four past Mechelen. So then there's no guarantee they'll win that. And then they face Ghent to finish the season, and Ghent will need a win at that point to guarantee playoff one football. So they're not going to get two wins. I think it's safe to say Oostende down as well.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that, Ben. I think, you know, when you look at Oostende's performance here, you know, you talked about how horrendous the defending was. I've actually got a note around that. I've wrote here, Oostende defending concentration and positioning, you know, question mark. I mean, some of the goals they conceded in this game were just horrific, actually. And they did look to me like a side who, a bit like when Damian Mark's goal went in, they just looked like a side who know it's done now, and don't have anything left. Mentally, they just look shot. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Concentration and positioning was just, you know, awful, awful stuff for the majority of these goals. Far too easy for St. Truiden as well. Couldn't believe their luck, actually. They had a great day, as it turned out. Gianni Bruno, who we've been talking a lot about, is now on 17 goals and is doing his absolute best to finish the season as top scorer, which I don't think he will, by virtue of the fact that obviously players like Hugo Kuipers, who is the current top scorer, is going to have six more games than Gianni Bruno's going to get. But he's had a phenomenal season, and where Gianni Bruno is playing next season, I think, is going to be one of the most interesting things to look out for over the summer. I say that hoping that he stays in Belgium, of course, because we know how good a player he can be. He knows where the goal is. He's great to watch when he's fit and he's on form, and hopefully he stays in Belgium. I'm sure there will be a number of Belgian clubs looking at him and very interested in him, because he's got the full package to offer a side who are missing that. There are a number of sides at the moment who I think would bite your hand off at the chance of Gianni Bruno playing for them next season. So he won't be short of some offers. But yeah, it looks like it's over for the Koos boys.
There's one reason why I won't want him back in the league next year, and that is that we are talking way too much about Gianni Bruno on this podcast. He gives us every reason to, so that's a good thing, of course, for him. But like in the bigger picture, it's a bit ridiculous, I think, even. But he did manage to get Sint-Truidens, top scorer inside one season. I think he equaled it this time. So he has still the goal, at least if it's not for the full top scorer of the league, to grab at least one more to actually be the sole top scorer for Sint-Truiden inside one season in the Belgian Pro League as well. You guys said a lot of things already, obviously. Okay, the Sint-Truiden win means that it has more ramifications for other teams in Fries. Well, Mechelen, who had, like, I believe only on paper, like, a 0.0001% chance still of going down, if Oostende would have won, and definitely Kortrijk from their last worries for the safety, as we already spoke about as well. A rare goal fest for Sint-Truiden as well. First time in 23 they scored more than two inside one game. And the more worrying thing, even with all the things you already said, like, it could have easily been double, I think, even. Like, they missed some incredible chances nonetheless. And yeah, that the Oostende defense is really, was not showing good things. I'll get one more final point on that in a little bit. It was Dumont's first professional goal as well. So that's the final thing on Sint-Truiden. Yeah. Oostende, like we already touched on this episode before, in the rest of the episode, already needs two wins as well. Now, isn't going to happen. Isn't very likely to going to happen. Haven't won twice in a row since I believe in end of July or end of July, beginning of August this year. Game day one, not one, two and three that they have managed to win two times in a row. And coming back to that defense, that last final point, they're in a fierce, terrible competition with Zulte Waregem now to even become the worst defense in the league this season. It's 71 goals conceded for Stende against the 74 for Zulte Waregem. Of course, a competition you do not want to be in, and also it's ridiculous that someone is in competition with Zulte Waregem for that stat, actually.
Yeah, they've been the proud bearers of the worst defence in the Pro League for a couple of years now, haven't they? I swear. Like, they love that title. At least they've scored 43 goals. Like, East End have scored the second least, joint with Kortrijk with 35. The funniest thing is that St Jude win 5-0, but their goal difference still is zero. Like, it's just like, that shows how badly they have not scored goals. Like, it's just ridiculous. Before we move on to the Challenger Pro League, let's quickly do some listener questions related to the Pro League. So first one we'll do is from Kurt at Brezza Kurt on Twitter. Will Andreas Arturo Vermeeren hold the key to a possible double for Antwerp? He's been playing more and more offensively with shots on target lately.
Well, I think the one thing I'll say about Vermeeren is I think we have to kind of be quite cautious around him. I know there's a massive amount of hype around him at the moment, and obviously Antwerp had a contract extension, so they're protecting their interest, and rightly so. Worth remembering, he's only 18. The positives are he's had, I think, 16 starts in 18 league games this season, 31 appearances in total if you include European qualifiers and kind of cup games as well. So he's certainly doing everything right. And yes, he has been very impressive. But I would just urge caution with him, because what I don't want, like lots of people, is I don't want him getting his big move too early. I think he needs to hold back a little bit. And in some ways, this has been his kind of breakout season. But I would hate for him to get his move too early. I think the question is interesting because he certainly has been playing in just a slightly more advanced role recently, and that might have something to do with the fact that obviously Janssen's only just come back into the side. So I think Van Bommel's probably encouraged him, just as part of positive coaching to try and venture a bit further forward and have more of a pop. But we need to be careful that we don't inflate him the way that some other people have been a little bit over keen to do. But certainly a very bright talent who I hope stays around at least for another year or 18 months. But realistically, there's a lot of interest in him at the moment, and it'll just be interesting to see if that turns into anything in the summer.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if that's actually an answer to that question, which was more regards towards this season, I believe. But he could play that role, of course, just like Elkanus could do it at Genk if he gets his statistics up. Same with Vermeer, and actually at Antwerp, he is indeed getting more and more in positions to score and give assists as well. So he's definitely improving in that aspect of his game. And just like, well, Uno also have like plenty of players that can make a difference. It can indeed hinge on a few really young raw talents really blossoming really quickly as well. And because they can be a bit inconsistent with Vermeer, it actually hasn't been too much inconsistency. He's been really interestingly consistent. So he could be the key to the double, I would say, yes. The key, there's always more than one, obviously, but I think he would at least have been crucial filling in a void when Antwerp had a lot of injury worries, and then, performing this well so that he actually stays in the squad, and like it's probably one of the first names on the sheets from Van Bommel by now. Then, okay, also touching a bit on what on Scott was telling him already, or actually saying, don't sell him already. That also, again, might depend. I do not know if he would be included in the under-21 squad, but he might also feature at that Europe Championships for under-21. Mm-hmm. That these kind of tournaments are also, again, unpredictable. Players have gotten transfers solely based on that, or their hype has sometimes decreased a bit. It's difficult to say, but definitely another potential hype plays there. If he lives it up there, then that could be a tougher story to keep hold of him for longer. Also, although I also hope, like everyone, that that at least have like two seasons around in the league to have a proper look at him, a breakthrough season and a breakout season and a confirming seasons, I guess.
Yeah, agreed. And I think we've kind of probably seen that pushing forward because he's playing alongside Cater, whereas he was playing a little bit alongside Stengs when he first came in. So it's kind of like he had to be the more defensive one. I think I love Cater, like don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of Mandela Cater, but if Alhassan Youssef comes back as well, I think Vermeulen can push forward even more if he wants to, because Youssef is just an absolute machine in terms of speed, fitness and like recovery of the ball. Like he was ridiculously good before he got injured, and if he can come back and play at that level, I think he'll definitely help. So I think Vermeulen is one of the keys. I think getting Janssen scoring and firing and playing again is like obviously what they need. I think he's the bigger key to them is in terms of goal scoring, because I think defensively they're good and they're fine. But yeah, I think he's one of the keys. Like Joris was kind of saying, there's so many different factors, but he's been impressive and it's been great to see him kind of come in at a time when they needed someone to fill a gap and then go on to become like the first choice in that position. So let's go to our second question. It's from Ollie at It's Really Ollie. Given Standard's track record this year, will playoff two be harder for them than playoff one would have been? I quite like this question because I think I just don't really know how to approach it, because at the end of the day, like on paper, like you'd say probably yes, just because of the way Standard like have been pretty abysmal against the lesser teams, say to say. But I think because like the level is going to be higher in playoff two than it would be, it's not like they're going to be playing against like a Serang or someone like that where they really drop their level. I think the intensity of the games, and if they win with that shout for playoff, like the fifth position, I don't think playoff two is the worst place for them to be in, because I think they will raise their game to match the teams around them. The likes of Vesselaar, if it's Charleroi or Anderlecht, especially like if it's Anderlecht and Club Brugge that are in there, like I think that they're going to be fine. Like they'll raise the level to those teams. I don't know, what do you guys think?
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, one, I'm not sure if we actually should seriously answer this question, because obviously it has a bit of a joking way, but like it is indeed completely dependent on which teams are. If we would answer seriously, it as long as we don't know the teams that are in this playoffs, like it could be some big a real big team filled playoff too. It could be Standard and another big team, and then the two, with all due respect, smaller teams that make it. Until we don't know the complete the part who is going to play parts in this playoffs, I don't think we can really say anything much on it if we would answer seriously. It is an interesting thought for exercise for sure, though.
Yeah, I definitely can't add anything to that.
Great. No, still love them. Keep those questions coming in. We've really enjoyed answering them over the last couple of weeks. Scott, you have nothing to add on that, but I'm sure you have plenty to talk about with Challenger. So over to you for a rundown of all the goings on.
Well, it's been a really big week in the Challenger, both in terms of results, but also quite a big bit of news. In terms of results first, quick roundup. Playoff 2, which is the relegation playoff. So Young Genk getting thumped by Dender 4-0. SL16 lost 2-1 at home to Denza, and Vertonghen lost 1-0 at home to Lommel, which means, in terms of the bigger picture, that Vertonghen are still bottom but are now only 3 points from safety. So it's kind of still all up for grabs in playoff two. Plenty of interest there. In terms of the title playoff, playoff one, Club Next, who've been going great guns, as we know, in playoff one since they started, lost 1-0 to Liersa. More about them in a minute. Beveren thumped Anderlecht Futures 4-1. That was the second thumping they dished out to Anderlecht Futures within a week. And Molenbeek won 4-0 at home against Beerschot. In terms of the bigger picture, as always, there is now still only 1 point separating Molenbeek at the top from Beveren in second. And of course, as everyone knows, there's a very, very big game coming up this weekend in Brussels where those two meet, which we spoke about last week. And this is probably the game to look out for in Belgium this coming weekend, I think, because of the potential implications there. Massive game. Both sides coming into it on really impressive form, actually. Beveren, 6 wins in their last 7, scoring 18 and conceding only 7. Molenbeek winning 5 of their last 7, scoring 17 and conceding only 7. So almost identical in form, very little between them at the moment. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens in that game. And I look forward to kind of catching that one to see what does happen. I mentioned Lierse, bit of news about them over the last week and a half. They have appointed a new T1. We know that Tom van Imschoot has stepped away, not renewing his contract. We spoke about that a while ago. They have recently appointed a new T1 in Joe Christians, 34-year-old Belgian coach, former player, defender in his playing days, played for Giel and Thies and was at Westerlo for a short period, although only made 3 appearances for them way back in 2008. Very young, up-and-coming coach, comes to Lierse from KSK Heist in the First National. Prior to that, he was T1 at Turnout, who he actually got promoted. So I suppose that's the most interesting thing on his short managerial CV. He's only been a T1, actually, for about 3 years, 3 and a bit years. But it's very positive and encouraging, I think, that a side like Lierse are giving a young up-and-coming coach an opportunity like this, because there were some big hitting names connected to Lierse in this role, you know, Carl Ofkins being one of them, and they decided not to go down that route. They've obviously lost a couple of big hitters on the pitch, Serge Tabicu and Leonardo Rocca leaving over the last couple of months. Once it was obvious that, you know, they weren't going to be promotion contenders. Joe Christians is actually going to be assisted by a slightly more experienced T2 in Geir Emmerichs, former under-23 coach at Anderlecht under John van den Brom when he was there. He, of course, won the title there with Anderlecht. So he knows how to get things done. He was also part of Besnik Hazy's staff as well when he took over. And when Besnik Hazy left Anderlecht and went to Legia Warsaw in Poland, Geir Emmerichs went with him. So Lierse have decided, probably wisely, to bring in a slightly more experienced head just to provide some assistance to Joe Christians. But I wish him well, because I think that's quite an interesting appointment, and it's always exciting to see a really exciting and ambitious young coach being given an opportunity to progress his career like that. And it looks like there's going to be a lot of young players coming through Lierse's system next season as things change up there.
Yeah, no, definitely. It should be an interesting appointment. Yeah, I quite like seeing someone getting given a chance from kind of the lower reaches, allowed to kind of see what they can do at the second tier level. So we wish him all the best. And yeah, absolutely looking forward to that Beveren against Molenbeek game. I mean, I'm just looking forward to being able to talk about it next. I feel like we've been talking about it coming up for so long. it's going to be nice to actually talk about what actually happens on the pitch. And it should hopefully have a proper kind of playoff final, cup final sort of atmosphere, because both fans know how important that one is going to be. But we'll definitely get onto that and all the rest of the Pro League action next week. But that's probably all we have time for this week. So as always, Scott and Joris, thank you very much for joining me on this one.
It's been a pleasure, and best of luck to the 3 Belgian sides in European action this week.
Yes, definitely. We haven't touched on it too much this week, but we'll make it up next week, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about Ghent against West Ham, Bayer Leverkusen against Union, and then Anderlecht against the Dutch rivalry, the Dutch border boys, AZ Alkmaar. Should be a good one. Hopefully we'll get 3 more positive results there. But yeah, like we said, we'll talk about those next week when we round up all the rest of the games. But in the meantime, if you enjoyed this episode and like what we do, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. And you can also get in touch with us to ask any questions that you have for us to answer next week. But once again, thank you very much for listening, and we'll speak to you very soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.